I'm giving up on sleep permanently.
You're not.
You heard it here first, kids. I'm never sleeping again.
It's like the reverse Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
Which, like, can you imagine? You're cursed to never sleep ever again until someone kisses you. And then you get kissed and immediately fall into a coma. Because honestly, that's my ideal scenario.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been waiting for that for years.
For someone to kiss you and then you can just sleep for 10 years.
Doesn't that sound great?
It does sound a little ideal. Like a little sugar and then a nap.
Yeah.
A long nap.
A very long nap.
Do we have any book news?
I do have book news.
That's good. You're always prepared for book news. I'm like, what's going on in the world of books?
I don't know.
This is not fantasy related, but I think it is important because, again, we mostly only talk about white dudes and what they do in fantasy. So we can diversify in our book news. So I think it was just announced yesterday that Denai Gurira and Lupita Nyong'o are going to adapt Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie's Americana as a mini-series.
They are.
Yeah,
as a mini-series?
Yeah, as a mini-series.
Okay, well, fantastic. This is the best news I've ever received.
Yeah, it's very... I've been reading a little bit about it. I'm very excited because Denai Gurira wrote Eclipsed, which was on Broadway. I believe it's a play about the Liberian Civil War,
didn't Lupita star in it for a while?
Starred in it, and I saw, obviously not on Broadway, but I saw it, and it was very, very good.
I remember that.
Yeah, really good, and so she's writing the script adaptation, so she'll
okay,
be,
and
I think,
is Lupita gonna act in it?
Yeah, Lupita's gonna be Efemelu, who's the main character, so, and Lupita is incredible and amazing, and so it's sparking a little bit of a small controversy, as they say, because Lupita is Kenyan, and she's playing a Nigerian character, and so there is, and this comes on the coattails of Lupita announcing that she's gonna produce the film adaptation of Trevor Noah's memoir, Born a Crime, which is all about apartheid in South Africa, where she will be playing his mother, I believe, so she's a Kenyan woman in Hollywood, which is very rare. It's very rare for a black woman in Hollywood, especially an African woman, to achieve any level of stardom because there's so much racism rampant across Hollywood. But it's also like she is picking up and putting on these different nationalities from Africa. And there's such a tendency for people to view Africa as Africa as opposed to Africa as a wide variety of cultures and identities and like ethnicities and all of that. And so it's like, I think people are mostly excited about it. I'm really excited about it. Obviously, they're two brilliant women who work really well together. They've worked together on a couple of other projects, like Eclipsed, which is just phenomenal. So really excited about it. But hopefully it prompts a lot of good dialogue about Africa and our representations of Africa. So
yeah, so it's this like weird thing where you have to support, not, you don't literally have to, but like we need to support it while still being critical, which is like true of all good media.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like just, I don't know, we just have to move forward and like be able to enjoy this and the fact that two really incredible women are doing a project written by another incredible woman.
Yeah.
But also like maintaining awareness.
Yeah, I feel like criticism has, we've just fallen into these two hard lines of what is enjoyment and what is
both.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is exactly what we're doing here.
Yeah.
All the time.
Exactly what we're doing.
We both enjoy it and criticize it.
Yeah, and I feel like that is what, especially, like, as a literature person, like, it's so exhausting to, like, not be allowed to have a space that's just, like, a discussion that brings up highlights and criticisms and what is enjoyable and what isn't. All in one, like, conversation, because that's what good art, quote-unquote, is supposed to do.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. And it's just really exciting to me that, A, Adichie, who became famous basically because Beyonce sampled her in Flawless, which was so good, that she's like, her work is going to reach probably hopefully a broader audience. Unfortunately, not everybody listens to Beyonce. I mean,
shocking,
I know. But also that if Denai Gurira, who literally Eclipsed was such like a fucking masterwork, like that script is incredible, and the fact that she's being able to produce a television project that, like, headed by a woman writer, like, that doesn't happen. That's incredible, especially especially a black woman. It's amazing.
I'm so happy for her.
I know.
So, like, thrilled.
I'm so thrilled for her. And to be able to tackle these themes of, like, home and immigration and loss, and, like, it's gonna be, I'm really excited for it. While it is not perfect, and also, like, who am I to start picking apart the nuances of African nationality?
Yeah, it's just really exciting generally to have a project that you're fond of be in the hands of someone you trust.
Insert theme song here.
Insert theme song here.
Okay, well, welcome to Everybody Hates Rand, our Wheel of Time podcast about the Wheel of Time, obviously, currently discussing the Eye of the World. I'm Emily Jusha.
I'm Sally Goodrich. Sorry, that was, like, a huge delay. I expected you to, like, say something else.
I couldn't think of anything witty. Not that I usually do, but...
You could introduce me instead. We could introduce each other.
That's Sally Goodrich. Oh, that's kind of sweet. I'd get really confused, though, and I'd be like... I'm Sally Goodger.
You could
and
be.
Have an identity crisis, and Freaky Friday would happen in our apartment.
That'd be fun.
Freaky Friday?
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't. You'd have to go to work.
Yeah.
You would have to go to work.
I know, but you wouldn't. And then I could play with the puppy if he's there.
Yeah.
Since he stole it from you today.
Yeah, you'd have a really good time walking dogs, but then you'd have to go to my other job. And
then it would be a disaster, and you'd probably get fired, so.
Oh.
People would be like, box, and I'd be like, where?
What are we doing? Did we ever agree whether we were going to talk about?
No, but we can. We can just give it a try, and then in editing, if you don't like it, you can just cut to the... Because that intro got rock, paper, fucked. Why did I do this?
Hashtag fucked.
Hashtag fucked.
I think we've gone a really long time without swearing.
Unbelievable shit.
Okay, well, how do we introduce this topic? We've had multiple people ask us, like, about the title of this podcast, Everybody Hates Rand, in case you missed it. Find us on iTunes, and Twitter, and Tumblr, and our email address, everybodyhatesrand@gmail.com. Ha! Now you can't just skip the end. Now you got it in the middle. Fuck you, skippers.
Ha! Don't skip the end.
Yeah, don't skip the end. It's the funniest part. Sally's...
It's where I wax poetic about my
That's
life,
where Sally
which is
tells
shameless.
Us about any traumatic life event she can think of off the top of her head. She has many, so it's been working so far.
Because I'm obsessed.
Okay, anyway. Our title, Everybody Hates Rand, first of all, it's partly tongue-in-cheek. We were being a little bit like, I don't remember, I just thought of it one day.
Yeah.
It's because this podcast came from the fact that we usually sit around our kitchen table after while Sally's reading Wheel of Time, and I'll ask her how it's going, and she'll tell me, and usually that involves a lot of complaining about Rand, and so when we were trying to come up with a title, Everybody Hates Rand, it seemed pretty funny. But now people are asking us why we hate Rand specifically, and I think we reference it kind of a little bit throughout, but maybe we need to be a little explicit, just to, like, put your fears at rest.
Yes.
So here's where I'm at, and you can cut in at any time or whatever, but we're working from a standpoint where science fiction and fantasy is dominated by men. You can't just write things or produce media as though you're in a vacuum where only the majority exists, even if you're part of the majority. Like, you have to think, how is the way that I write women affecting women? Because maybe I view the world in such a way that there are only Bond girls and mother figures, but guaranteed your mother doesn't think of the world that way. So you have to start, like, fleshing out your characters. And one of the reasons Wheel of Time is so interesting is because Robert Jordan had taken a step in the right direction of including this really incredible array of female characters who are so fun and funny and ambitious and diverse, and he writes them as though they're people. And that's, like, a really incredible thing coming from the 90s when he was writing and into the 2000s and even now. Like, so I don't know, that's what makes Wheel of Time appealing to me, and it's really jarring to then be treated to Rand as a point of view character and as the hero who has a really troubling relationship with women. Like, like, we'll joke a lot about how Rand is annoying, and he is annoying. He's also very interesting in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
He has some of the most fascinating, like, stuff going on with his sanity and mental illness. And even, I think, some really interesting stuff going on with the hero narrative and how he copes with that as, like, a conscious hero in the hero narrative. But he's impossible to like because he doesn't treat women like people.
Yeah.
And it's, like, this symptom of this greater problem that I guess Robert Jordan fell into, where maybe he thought he was being conscious of it or he thought it was interesting, but it's basically, like, Rand personifies this issue where men think that if they treat women uber respectfully, then, like, then that's somehow correct.
Yeah.
And obviously treat women respectfully, treat everyone with respect, but this is, like, chivalry taken to a toxic level.
Absolutely.
So, it's just really, I don't know, he doesn't allow women to have choices, he doesn't allow women to, like, be their own people.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if you don't see that, then sorry, but we do.
Oh, yeah. On every single page. And if you don't see it, like, I also, again, don't know how, but, like, look particularly in, like, books 4 and 5, his relationship with the Maidens of the Spear, and the fact that the Maidens at one point have to come in and begin to, like, break their spears, being like, if you don't let us be in these battles and have our own lives and have our own decisions, like, you're taking our honor away from us.
You're taking our agency.
Yeah, you're taking our agency away from us. You're not letting us. And the idea that Rand's like, I don't want any of these women to die for me, it's, like, so frustrating because these women, those women in particular, are warriors and they're actively choosing this life for themselves, and they chose to be Rand's bodyguards for themselves. And so the fact, yeah, what you said about, like, chivalry taken to a toxic level is just absolutely true. And it's so frustrating and so alienating as a female reader, and I would hope to a lot of men, like, male readers as well, but especially as a woman, to constantly be in Rand's head and him just being like, I have to worry so much about Edwene. I can't let these women do this for me. I can't.
I have to, my guilt involving these women is going to become one of the symptoms of my madness. It's just like, and you can argue that Rand experiences character growth throughout the course of these novels, and maybe he does, but honestly, I think a lot of that is hijacked by Brandon Sanderson coming in books 12, 13, and 14, and I guess we'll talk about this at greater length when we get there, but I don't feel Brandon Sanderson does justice to the female characters, and indeed to many of the male characters in their treatment of women.
Yeah.
Brandon Sanderson historically doesn't write women well. He's part of the problem of science fiction and fantasy being dominated by men who aren't allowing women to be women on the page. But even if Rand does experience character growth, the fact that it takes him 14 books to get there is unacceptable.
Yes, absolutely.
And, like, it's a 14-book series, but we see Matt and Perrin and any of the other characters change much more. Like, this doesn't need to be a full 14-book arc. This should have ended if it was, like, if this was going to be a part of Rand's character, it should have ended in book 4 or book 5 with the Maidens, if absolutely. Not sooner.
Yeah, if not sooner. If not at the end of book 1, basically, when he, like, it's so, like, it's so gross, honestly, to me. Like, it's, again, super alienating, and every time I have to read a Rand point of view where he's talking about women, I, like, basically don't read them.
Sure.
I just, like, skim them because I'm like, I can't handle this.
Yeah, it's like, it's just like every other alienating representation of women on the screen. Like, I can't watch James Bond movies because they have Bond girls. Like,
no.
Which is horrifying.
So horrifying.
Because it's just, like, male fantasy. And Rand is, like, another type of male fantasy where men are just, like, allowed to relentlessly protect women.
Yeah.
Despite what the women themselves would choose.
It's,
and, like, Rand is reprimanded for it often, and maybe that's, I don't know, Robert Jordan, but, like, taking the author out of the equation, the fact that the women in Rand's life are telling him it's unacceptable and he continues to do it anyway is just, like, another part of the problem.
Yeah, and the fact that he won't listen, it's exactly the problem. And, again, talking about, I think last time we were talking about Edwene and Perrin and, like, how much credit we want to give Robert Jordan or not, like, in a way, like, it's one thing about Robert Jordan that, like, keeps me from, like, totally loving these series, because Robert, the way that it's integrated into Rand's narrative isn't even, like, as self-conscious. Like, I think of Rand in comparison to another tall ginger boy, Finnegan, from Finnegan of the Rock.
Excellent.
excellent. And his entire arc is about learning how to let women be in charge and, like, yeah. learning how, what it means to, like, have these women making decisions that he thinks he can protect them from and protect his nation from. And it's shocking, written by a woman. So she handles
notably
it.
Notably
written by a woman. But Finnegan still reads on the page as a very authentic male character. And, like,
whatever makes a male character, by the way, gender's a construct.
Yeah, gender is a construct. Men can write women and women can write men. That's totally fine if you, I don't know, speak to a woman once in a while if you're a man. But, yeah, Finnegan has a lot of these similar moments about, like, oh, I'm in charge and you can't do this and, like, blah, 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 blah. But it ends at the end of book one. Like, it ends, and so the rest of the series, like, of course there's still, like, a little bit of that nonsense, but, like, it's so deeply integrated into Finnegan's narrative that if you were to remove that, I don't think the books would have the same power.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. Like, if you were to remove Rand's treatment of women in Wheel of Time, the books would become infinitely better.
Agreed.
Okay, so, I just got really passionate about that. My heart's, like, beating out of my chest. I hate him so much.
That's why we hate him. If you can't relate, then...
Maybe find a different podcast.
Yeah, honestly, like, yeah, the title's tongue-in-cheek, but it's also based on the assumption that you, too, can find something to hate in Rand, and if it's not that, fine, maybe it's something else, yeah. But, like, we're gonna be critical of these books, and especially Rand, and especially other characters. Like, Rand's not gonna get all of it.
No, Rand's not gonna get all of it.
There's plenty to say about Lan.
There's plenty. About Elaine.
Yeah,
about...
oh, God.
I hate
just
Elaine.
Who doesn't hate Elaine so much.
Fucking resident white feminist.
Oh,
I hate her so much. Yeah, about a lot of people. But, like, and especially as we move forward with Rand's, like, hero's journey, where, like, women, like, the maidens, like, his love interests come to play a larger part. Like, the hate's only gonna go up, my dudes. So, like...
Always with humor.
Always with humor.
We haven't been very funny for the last 10 minutes.
With, yeah, but. this is pretty real. But, yeah, always with humor. Because, yeah.
You've gotta laugh or you gotta cry.
Gotta laugh, you gotta cry, my dudes. But, yeah, so.
That's where we're at.
Anyway, that's where we're at. Coming at Rand All Four, my arch nemesis.
Well. So... in the books themselves, going back to The Eye of the World.
Third Eye Blind.
Third Eye Blind, as it is fondly known.
By me and me alone.
We just had Perrin and Edwene's first little interlude. Now we're going back to Rand and Matt. And they are on our pirate ship, captained by Bail Damon.
America's sweetheart.
Yeah, America's sweetheart, Bail Damon.
Bail Damon.
Of the terrible facial hair.
Of the terrible facial hair.
The strange accent. And the lust for adventure.
Ooh.
He really does.
He talks about that in this chapter.
Yeah, he's like, don't you just want to explore?
Don't you just want to, like, go see the world?
And Matt's like, I want to fuck a pile of gold, so I don't know what you're can't relate.
Honestly. Matt's like, I want to fuck a pile of gold. Rand's like, I want to go home. Lame.
Yeah, everyone. Lame.
Like, lame. Nerd.
Nerd alert.
True.
But basically, they're on this pirate ship headed down the river. Several days pass. I'm not actually sure how much time.
Yeah, it's like at one point, it's 10 days to Whitebridge. So they're on there for probably about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Something around that.
A fortnight. To use fantasy language. Look at me.
Ooh, Emily Jusha.
Let me roll that d20. Okay, so multiple things going on here.
Yes.
First of all, navigating the politics of the ship, which is something that Tom does adeptly, Rand and Matt less adeptly. Basically, the ship's moving really slowly, which is already kind of bad, but, like, Domon, like, won't let anyone rest because he's really worried about Trollocs catching up to them, which is legitimate fear, especially given he's been chased all the way from Saldia.
Yeah.
But this is starting to understandably wear at his crew's nerves, and, they're getting a little, restless,
ants in the pants kind of situation.
Mutinous.
Yeah, there we go.
Not like Black Sails season 1 mutinous, just like Black Sails season 1 episode 3 mutinous.
Okay.
If you feel me.
I mean, I think I do, but unlike you, I guess I do not have the Dewey Decimal System. attached
I don't
to black
know.
Sails.
I don't know. Man.
That metaphor didn't make any sense. I ruined my own damn joke.
Attached to black sails. Mutiny. Look under.
Season 1, episode 3.
Gay love triangles. Look under. Season 2. Well, all of the seasons. It's a very gay show. Highly
recommend. It's incredible.
Except don't watch this scene in season 4 where there's keel hauling, because that ruined my entire life. I still need to watch season 4. I'd be happy to watch it with you, just not that scene.
Okay, I'll watch
make
it.
I'll make you skip it like I do in Fullmetal Alchemist.
No, there's a lot in Fullmetal Alchemist to skip.
Only the
Chimera.
Yeah, just the one scene, the little girl and the Chimera. I assume there's some crossover between the Fullmetal Alchemist crowd and the...
If not, there fucking better be. Turn
on
this podcast. Go watch Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. It's on Netflix.
And Hulu.
Oh!
Yeah, I just saw it.
And
the other day. Damn, I don't know why Fullmetal Alchemist... Probably because the Netflix movie just got
released. So they're like...
Which, by the way, we watched it. It's hilarious.
So funny.
So funny. The wigs are terrible.
The wigs are so bad. 10 out of 10 would also recommend watching
it. I feel like I didn't experience, like, humor comedy at its fullest until I saw Roy Mustang's wig.
It's so bad, you guys.
And then I, like, ascended. I sprouted wings in our living room and I flew up. To speak to God directly, yeah. I was like, what happened? And he was like...
And he's like, LMAO, wasn't it hilarious?
He was like, the budget was very cheap. And I was like, obviously they spent it all on their...
CGI?
CGI, is that what it is?
Special effects? I don't know.
Alchemy? I assume they used real alchemy.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, alchemy.
Anyway, pirates. Where was I? Mutiny?
Mutiny.
Okay, yeah. So everyone's kind of pissed at Damon. He's doing this hilarious thing where every time everyone's getting antsy, he just, like, goes and gets the fucking Trolloc shit that is on their boat, and he just, like, hangs it on the mast like a warning. It's so fucking hilarious.
Fucking drama queen.
I know, and, like, glares at everyone in the eye, and everyone's like, fine, back to work, bitches. And Tom, of course, just, like, stays out of everyone's way when this is happening, because he knows that if anything gets worse, like... He's gonna be the first to die, basically. Rand and Matt are less understanding of this. Rand thinks that the guy he stepped on a couple episodes ago when they were boarding the ship is gonna be the source of problems, which he is later on. So Rand, astute, but, like, not on the ship.
Yeah.
It's gonna be fine. Meanwhile, Tom's keeping up the charade of teaching them to be glee men.
This is, like, my favorite thing that
I know, it's
in
the most hilarious sequence. It goes, we're in the chapter called On the Arenal or something.
I think it's, yeah, Flight Down the Arenal.
Flight Down the Arenal or something. We're going a little bit into the next chapter too, I think. But yeah, Tom's trying to teach them how to be glee men, so juggling. He won't let them touch his harp.
Yeah, he's like, don't touch my fucking harp.
He's like, I'll fucking kill either of you.
Kill you if you touch my harp.
I'll throw you over the ship.
But he does let them touch his flute, and they're both so bad at it.
I know. He's like, Rand is a little better, because he's a fucking shepherd, so he knows how to play the panpipes,
I imagine.
Which I think is a hilarious trope that exists in Wheel of Time. It's evidence of tropes having a crossover in this universe, which I love.
Super funny.
Matt is terrible at it, and everyone is, like, holding their ears, and Tom's like, I would rather die than ever let you touch my flute again.
Which, I don't know if there's anything to this, but it's, like, a hilarious turning of the Sirens episode in the Odyssey, where all the crew have their ears stuffed with wax so they don't hear this beautiful singing, but here's Matt, the least sexy character at this point, because he's going full Smeagol, and playing the flute, and everyone, like, fucking trying to drown themselves, because it's so bad.
Yeah, and Tom's like, stop it, and like someone in the crew is like LOL, and Matt's like gonna chuck the fucking flute at him. He's like, fuck you
specific sailor.
We were just talking about how if Matt didn't have the dagger, this would probably be his big gay experience, because honestly, surrounded by sailor men, we all know the sailor men are very sexy, very gay,
very sexy, very shirtless.
Yeah.
Damn. They're sweating and rowing, and so in an alternate universe, which is arguably better, Matt and the sailor he almost threw his flute at fall in love and have, like, an epic gay romance.
No, Matt would just fuck his way through this entire crew.
That, too. That's...
And that. But simultaneously.
Yeah, at the same time.
Yeah.
And the sailor is, like, has to go through this internal journey of being, like, I can't stop my boy from fucking all these people because he's not really my boy, but I want him to be my boy. And that's, like, his internal
commitment.
Monologue.
Yeah. What does it mean?
Yeah, what does commitment mean?
And Matt's like, I'm 17.
And Matt's like, I'm 17, while I'm bad at the flute. I don't know.
I was about to make a flute and blowjobs thing, but then I was like,
You could turn it into a euphemism. I'm bad at the flute. I don't know how to suck dick, period.
But, like, you'd think Matt would be really adept at sucking dick. I don't
just
know.
Just, like,
why.
Naturally?
Yeah, just, like... It just seems like one of those things Matt would pick up.
It's, like, a natural talent for...
Like, a hilarious thing throughout Wheel of Time is that, like, people are constantly alluding to the fact that Matt's good with his hands. In terms of, like, he does show, like, some talent as a juggler and, like, throwing knives, which is also, like, Tom's weapon of choice. Like, there's a scene later in the books where someone throws a knife at him and Matt catches it out of the air, which
That's
is
awesome.
Really sexy. It's
yes.
the most turned on I've ever been
Super
in these
sexy.
Entire books. But, like, there's also sort of a, what's the word?
Double entendre.
Yeah, there's double entendre of Matt being good with his hands, where it's like, Matt's good with his hands.
Ladies and men.
Yeah, sure. Handjobs.
Phonejobs.
Whoever.
Or whoever, or you know.
Whatever genitals you may or may
yeah,
not have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Good for you, Matt Cathan.
Good for you,
Fucking
Matt.
Little...
Good at handjobs, but given his experience with the flute, less good at blowjobs, so.
Yeah, so...
That's too bad.
Unfortunate that your hypothesis got disproved by a flute.
I know. Sorry.
It's okay. Again, in this alternate reality where Matt is full gay on this ship full of sailors, he's also really good at blowjobs. So, head cannons.
I know. Sadly, though, that isn't the universe we live in.
No, sadly not.
Sadly, Matt found his shiny dagger and is, like, in the process of... He's, like, about to take this dagger to Vegas and marry it. Like, for God's
yeah.
sake. He's just, like, stroking it in the shadows.
Like,
while Rand is having euphoric episodes at the top of the boat.
Yo, that episode is super weird. Because it's, like, a form of, like... It's one of those weird things where, you like, you think it's channeling. But, like, arguably, maybe not. Maybe Rand is just... Because, like, I don't know if this ever happens to you. But, like, if you're standing on something really high, don't you ever just get the urge to, like, jump?
Yeah, of course.
Or,
it's
like...
intrusive thoughts. Or
yeah.
Like a total thing.
Or my particularly bad one is I'm near a body of water, I want to fucking throw my phone in it.
What?
Every single time. I'm, like, even in the shower, I'm like, what if I just, like, fucking dunked my phone in this water? I don't know, guys. It's super weird, but it's really bad at the beach, because I'm always just like, what if I took this tiny death break and chucked it into the water? Okay, not relevant.
My thing is when I'm driving on the freeway, usually to get from, like, Salt Lake City to my parents' house, I'll be, like... driving along, and I'll be like, what if I just put the e-brake on right now?
Too fast, too furious, this shit, motherfucker.
What if I just fucking became Vin Diesel?
That's ideal.
Actually, I'd go through the windshield, probably, or the airbag would go off, killing
yes.
me instantly.
Likely, but there's a small chance you might become Vin Diesel.
I know, it's
like... like, it's tiny, but it's there.
You either die young or live long enough to become Vin Diesel.
Exactly.
Yeah, so,
So anyway, Rand at the top of the ship wanting to throw his phone into the water is basically, like, let's go, and this is, like, balancing kind of on this thing, and everyone's like, he's gonna fucking die.
He's like, wait, like, Tom has to come up and, like, yell at him.
Yeah, Tom, he makes Tom Marilyn, old as balls, climb the mast to get his dumb ass down.
I mean, to be fair, Tom is teaching them tumbling, which I think is hilarious, because Tom's like... here's how to do a somersault, you sons of bitches.
And at one point, he's like, even like a dirty farm boy, like, you can do it or something like that.
You can do a handstand.
Yeah.
And Matt's like, I cannot.
And Matt's like, oh, my dagger.
Well, this is an iconic scene at, like, the top of the ship. Like, enough so that the, like, ebook cover is, like, referencing the scene of
yeah.
Rand at the top of the ship. And, like, I remembered it when this chapter started with, like, a dream sequence. I was so
yes.
thrown... like, taken aback because I thought it started with Rand being at the top of the ship and just, like, laughing hysterically.
It's so weird.
I don't know why, but, yeah, it does, like, seem to be one of the greater symptoms of Rand channeling.
Yeah.
Because, like, in, Barlon, when he's, like, facing the White Cloaks.
Yeah. Oh,
again,
right.
There's
he
no, like,
really giddy.
Yeah, there's no, like, actual channeling going on. Not, like, with Bella when he, like, makes her go faster, or later in the book when he, like, I don't know, fucking, like, makes a lightning strike or something. But, like, he is, like, starting to experience in, like, increasingly small gaps of time these, like, euphoric periods. Followed by kind of, like, he's getting a little, like, bipolar, I'd
yeah,
say.
Yeah, there's, like, some really spikes of highs. And it's interesting
yeah,
that, like,
just highs and lows, going from kind of manic energy to really low energy.
Yeah, and though it's weird that in, like, these manic euphoric moments, like, all concern for himself just, like... vacates yes. the premises. He's like, he's up there like flowing in the wind like a kite, and he's like, this is so great. And everyone's like, yeah, he's literally going
it's
to die.
It's really self-destructive yeah. and scary for the people around him, and he just like doesn't really...
Yeah, he doesn't notice.
Yeah, and it's kind of like this interesting parallel between Rand not knowing what's going on with himself and also like somehow not really coming to terms with what's happening with Matt.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, my hell.
Because what's happening with Matt in this sequence and like later on, of course, when Rand and Matt are on the road is just like so scary.
Mm-hmm.
And if that was actually happening to your friend, like if you started like clutching some fucking anything obsessively and like whispering to it, I would like, I know you hate the ER, but I would take you there.
Yeah.
I'd be like, she hates needles. I'll sit on her if you like need me to figure out what's going on. Like... She's allergic to penicillin. Here's her medical history.
True.
She's my wife.
I'm allergic to penicillin.
Okay, yeah.
I'm glad that you know that. Very tender.
I know that. I feel like one time you told me that. You were like, if you ever need to take me to the doctor, I'm allergic to penicillin. And I like filed that away immediately.
That's good.
Copy.
Anyway, yes. So Matt is going like... I keep saying this, but he literally is going, like, full Gollum, where he's, like, whispering to something in the dark, and literally becoming more drawn into himself. Like, in the chapter following this of Rand and Matt at Whitebridge, Rand's like, you haven't laughed in, like, 10 days, and Matt's like, I'm stressed because we're being chased, which, admittedly, that's, like, a valid reason, but also, like, not enough to, like, explain what the fuck he's doing.
Laughter is so much a part of who Matt is as a character that, like, Min literally saw it in one of her visions. Like, a laughing face.
He's just laughing, so...
Matt's, like, Matt's the comic relief, so it's really scary to, like, watch this go on, and it's really frustrating that Rand isn't doing anything about it.
Yeah.
And, like, given he can't do much because he's really preoccupied with survival, and eventually it's gonna be, like, him just dragging Matt along... Literally, at some point, like, Matt's going to be blind, and Rand's just, like, guiding him,
mm-hmm.
which is really sweet and all, but, like...
Sheepdog Randolph.
Yeah. So sweet. But, like, yeah, it's incredibly, like, frustrating, but also, like, just sad to watch Rand not being able to do anything, but also, like, not really... It feels like he knows something's going on, but, like, isn't willing to internalize it.
Yeah, which I feel like is another chronic problem of his. Like, Rand is kind of oblivious when regards to other people. He's very, like, what is the word that I want? Like, I want to say self-obsessed, but that's not right. He's just very focused on himself.
Yeah, he's pretty observant about, like, the things going on around him. He just, like, doesn't often let them... He's so stubborn that sometimes he just, like, doesn't let things affect him, even if he knows them.
Yeah.
There's a sequence later on around, books 7 and 8, where literally one of the Forsaken is going to be in his entourage, like, disguised as one of the Ashaman. And Rand, like, every instinct he fucking has is going to be, like, screaming at him to get rid of this guy, and Rand is just like, no.
Oh, my baby boy.
So it's just, like, this whole, and, like, it happens, it's hilarious because he's always like, women are so complicated, but he's doing the same thing here with Matt.
Yeah.
Like, he'll be like, I don't know what Elaine feels about me, I don't know why Alvienda's being so weird, and it's like, she wants to fuck your brains out, you dick.
It's so obvious.
Yeah, it's super obvious, and it's super obvious what's happening with Matt here, so, I just said a really weird sentence. What's happening with Matt is also very obvious, but Rand can't or won't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I know we're short on time, but like...
No, that's okay. I just have some things that I want to say.
Go for it.
I will hopefully do shortly. Okay, so one part of this episode, this chapter, Jesus.
Well, yeah.
Episode, chapter. It's a really nebulous term at this point.
Whatever.
In this chapter, there's another instance of them going past these runes and these, like, ruins. I don't know why I said
you
runes.
You said, yeah, I was like, go past these really, like, Mount Rushmore-esque.
Like, yeah, they're exactly like the big elf kings in Lord of the Rings sail through that are, like, basically, like, doing the, like, Heisman Trophy pose, but,
thank you. Also, fun fact, they passed the Tower of Genji, which you don't know what that is, do you really?
I think it's mentioned in book 4 for a second.
Yeah, I think it's mentioned in, like, Perrin's point of view, but, they passed the big, like, shiny tower. And Matt says, I'll bet there's treasure inside. A thing like that must have been made to protect something valuable. So that's, like, foreshadowing, obviously, because Matt's going to go there in book 13 and have to rescue Moiraine, who is literally, like, the fate of the world hangs in the balance. So,
Yeah, I bet there's treasure inside. Again, wants to fuck a pile of gold right now.
I know, I'm like, please just calm down, dummy.
He's super weird. So they pass, like, by all of these ruins, not runes, by these ruins, and these, again, are very, like, reminiscent of the big elf people in Lord of the Rings, and I don't think that is anything, it's just interesting. And this is another one of those instances of immersive fantasy, where we have these ruins all over the place, as if to, like, constantly remind us that we are in a world that is very old.
Yeah, and, like, that whole conversation they then have with Domon, like, surrounding those ruins and the Tower of Genji.
Yeah.
Is all very, like, immersive fantasy.
Yeah.
That's like, when we get our first, like, there's a whole museum and it's full of animal bones that are, like, crazy.
Yeah, that are, like, not real animals. It's
and
cool.
Tons of time has passed and we don't know what the fuck's going on, so, like.
Yeah, and I'm really interested in that because, again, Robert Jordan, in these books, basically, like, beats us over the head with the fact that it is, like, a world that is very deep in, like, time and, like, a lot of things have happened. And this is, like, but I'm just so interested in it because, like, there is this extended period of time that has happened, but, and I know I should preface this whole rant by saying, obviously, I haven't read everything, so I don't know all of how things played out in the past and whatever spoilers I might be missing, so take this whole rant with a grain of salt in that way. Because I know, like, there was different types of things available in the Age of Legends, blah, blah, blah. But the fact that such an extended period of time, like, thousands upon thousands of years are taking place, and yet, like, relatively speaking, like, technology is very stalled, like, in terms of what mm-hmm. we would think of as technology. Like, there's no, like, really, like, mass-scale industrial revolution as, like, would have taken place in this same type of time scale in our world. And that's, like, common across all epic fantasy, like, Lord of the Rings, which is, like, there's a lot there going on with industrialization in terms of, like, Isengard, but it's still, like, trees and nets, basically. Like, it's not anything like steam engines or whatever that's coming through. And so it's, like, a trademark of epic fantasy that, like, there is no industrial revolution. Like, it kind of stalls out in what we call, like, medieval fantasy. And obviously I have not unpacked this, and I don't know if it's based on anything, but, like, one, the professor in my fairy tale class that I took said something that was really interesting to me, and she said, there was no other age in human history where religion was so deeply intertwined with the daily life, which is why the Middle Ages are such a huge part of fantasy.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and, like, obviously, like, thinking, like, pre-Christianity, like, religion had a huge part in people's lives, too, but if you think of the Middle Ages, especially with the way, like, Catholicism was, like, so tied up in what people were doing on, like, a day-to-day basis. It's just really interesting to think of because
people in the West, anyway, which
yeah,
is where
exactly.
the most of these fairy tales are coming from.
Yeah, most of these fairy tales are coming from, and where most of our epic fantasy is coming from. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's, like, that is such an interesting idea that you cannot separate epic fantasy from, like, its religious aspects, and I think this is due in large part, this is just gonna be me, like, hypothesizing and waxing poetic, but I think it's very interesting. I think this has to do in large part because the epic fantasy tradition is so deeply bound up in Lord of the Rings. Like, everything, not everything, I can't make that blanket statement, but so much of what we think of as epic fantasy, capital E, capital F, is so deeply entrenched in Tolkienian tradition. And what Tolkien was doing with Lord of the Rings initially, like, before he decided to make it what it was, which was, like, this fantasy epic, he was, like, when he was in World War I, like, in the trenches, and, like, even before that, he was writing these stories that he intended to be a type of, like, what is it? Like, a mythology for England. Like, he wanted
yeah,
to create
yeah.
something, like, a mythology, which is a very odd project, and I think a little bit self-important, but J.R.R. Tolkien, I think, struggled with that a lot. Yeah.
To go around for England.
And so, inevitably, like, his, The Lord of the Rings series is so deeply affected by myth, especially, like, Norse myth. There's this, Norse myth, but also there's, like, this Finnish epic called the Kalevala, which has a lot to do with mm-hmm. singing wizards, which is where, like, a lot of the magic of Lord of the Rings comes from. So it's so, like, deeply entrenched in this myth that he's created this mythos. And, like, it's not always necessarily super obvious in Lord of the Rings as it is in other epic fantasy. because J.R.R. Tolkien had his, like, legendarium, the Silmarillion, which has existed outside of The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, which was actually written in large part before the Lord of the Rings series. And so part of the reason why I personally, like, think Lord of the Rings is so interesting is that it, like, it's, like, almost more deeply entrenched in the idea of being immersive because it has, like, this whole, like, mythic history that exists separate from it and that you don't necessarily need to understand it, but if you know it, it becomes more interesting. And so, just really interesting, and then, okay, again, a little bit rambly, but fantasy is also, like, I think this term might have, it either came from Lewis or Tolkien, the idea of mythopoesis, and, like, the root poesis is a Greek word which means making, and so poetry is, like, literally a form of making, and mythopoesis is myth-making, which is often what fantasy is called, especially fantasies such as Tolkien and Lewis, to an extent, were making that have their own mythologies, and these are often called secondary worlds or referred to as sub-creation. And so epic fantasy and fantasy is, like, so deeply entrenched in this mythopoesis, and so it's just, like, really, really fascinating to me that, like, these worlds will not abide both, like, industrial technology and magic and religion, and this idea that there's something inherently, like, mutually exclusive about them. And so I don't know if it's this idea that magic is, like, supposedly associated with more, like, quote-unquote pagan religions, like pre-Christian religions in the West, or we think of it more as this, like, mystical thing, like, maybe there's some type of, like, orientalism to it that we don't want to, like, put it in the, like, modern day world. It's because mysticism and magic is so much excluded from, like, this type of, like, the Abrahamic religions. And that's become more complex as people have started to, like, push the bounds of, like, what a fantasy means. But, like, I was thinking about it to the best of my ability. And then, again, this is kind of an, as interesting as I think it is, this is an arbitrary way to, like, separate fantasy. But, like, it happens a lot in Portal Quest fantasies. Like, obviously, Harry Potter is set in modern-day England. And Harry came out, not modern-day England, it's set in, like, the 90s or whatever. So Harry doesn't have, like, an iPhone.
But also, so, like, can you imagine?
Wouldn't that be hilarious? Harry Potter gets Ron an iPhone.
Such a different story.
Such a different story. And it's like Harry Potter, and I just recently read Akata Witch and Akata Warrior by Nnedi Okorafor, so those are kind of at the front of my brain. But, like, there's a lot going on there with, like, the, like, how magic and technology interacts. I think she always does that in kind of a really interesting way, but, like, there's no, like, solid immersive fantasy that I can think of that, like, allows magic, like, industrial technology and magic to exist in the same way. Because even when there are, like, magic exists in a story, like, I think of Percy Jackson, like, there are phones there, but, like, Rick Riordan goes out of his way in almost every single book to be like, you can't use these,
yeah,
because, like, the monsters will be able to find you. So then, of course, you run up against the idea that, like, technology and or magic renders the other one meaningless. The idea that, like, magic is doing things that technology would allow us, like, in Wheel of Time, instead of, like, hopping on an airplane and flying to Tarvalon in 45 minutes, we have the idea of, like, traveling or using the ways. And so this is just a not a conclusive rant, but I was thinking about ruins and the fact that, like, there's so much of that, but there's not really any, like, I don't know, like, industrial technological advancement. Let me make sure I've wrapped that up. Yep, I have, so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we have, like, what we know of the Age of Legends, it was a very technologically advanced society, but with the, like, but technologically, magically, in terms of, like, magic was at the center of all their technology. So it was more like the breaking of the world happened and all their technology was lost, but all that technology was magic-based. So it's just, like, my favorite parts of Wheel of Time are, like, when he starts playing with the idea of an industrial revolution.
Yeah.
Because you do get very much the sense that that is, like, imminent and coming. First with Matt's invention of cannons and also with, like, Rand's. One of the really cool things I think Rand does is, like, the creation of the schools that aren't magic-related at all. They're just, like, let scientists and let librarians, like, come and do their shit. Because Rand, one of his very likable traits is that he's incredibly bookish.
Yeah, it's so tender.
It's very sweet. He reads books, like, to calm himself down. And, like, when he finds out he's, like, the fucking dragon reborn, he's just like, I have to read up on it.
Yeah.
It's very sweet.
It's like, studying his own prophecies, which is one of the best parts of these books in general.
It's
yeah.
So interesting. But yeah, the idea that he's playing with an industrial revolution in the future is interesting, but also, like, yeah, the fact that he would have to, like, for me to buy that they're at this level of not technology would mean that the breaking of the world took them back to the Stone Age.
Yeah, which I just don't know if I believe.
Yeah, you can't believe it, especially once you get these, like, flashbacks to the breaking of the world through Rand's experience in Ruidaen, through, like, the eyes of the Ael, where it's, like, clearly the world was fucked up and falling apart. We get to see the Ael, basically their fucking wagons being loaded up with iPhones or the Age of Legends, like, equivalent, all their magic shit, and just, like, being sent away. And so much of that got destroyed, but not all of it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, it's
just... it's just weird. It just reads very weird. I don't know. Not that, again, I don't think it's like a detriment to the whole series. Yeah. But it's something that I'm like always thinking about when I read Wheel of Time.
So I think Robert Jordan does like a fun thing later in the series. I don't think it happens fast enough, maybe, where like he starts to play with magic getting triggered into this, like, revolution of, like, new knowledge and old knowledge, and also technology happening at the same time. So, like, the idea that the world is going to be totally remade again at the end of this series, but, like, in a different direction.
Yeah. Which is fascinating, and I love that, because, again, while I was rambling through this, it seems like in fantasy there's this push that, like, technology and magic cannot sustain in the same world together, which I don't think I buy.
No, yeah.
And it's because not everybody can use magic, so then there's a lot of room for that. And so the fact that Robert Jordan wants to explore it is so good and so interesting. It's just, and I know it's like, this is the whole thing with books about prophecy, is that this is a specific moment, and therefore a lot of things that are important to the world are going to happen at this specific moment. So I get that, Taveren, whatever, but like
the Taveren, whatever.
it's so frustrating to me that like there feels like there's almost no impetus of that before that, when technology is naturally like a growing of like what has happened in the past. And so you're right. It feels like,
yeah, this world's stalled out.
The world is like stalled out, and all of a sudden Randall Thor, the Dragon Reborn, is going to like prompt all this stuff. Like, I get it. That's the whole plot conceit. But the fact that it also has to happen on the level of technology and magic is very bizarre to me.
Yeah, for this conceit to work, he has to start in the Eye of the World, which is basically, like, let's be honest, Lord of the Rings plagiarism.
We've all been there.
It's happened to all of us. Yeah. We know. But, like, yeah, and Lord of the Rings is so entrenched in not having technology.
Yeah. And another thing that I want to mention, this is a totally off-topic kind of thing. Not exactly, but I should have mentioned at the beginning of my rant. Fantasy is often seen of as reactionary. Like, this is a criticism of it, and why it's often called escapist is because it oftentimes takes place in something akin to the Middle Ages. It's, like, as though people want to go back to this, like, golden age before technology ruined everything.
Golden Age who? Yeah, like, honestly, and so the Middle Ages sucked. Everyone died of the plague. A single rat could kill an entire continent. Like, what was there golden about it?
I think that's incredible. What are you talking about?
I was on the rat side for all of that.
I was absolutely on the rat side for all of human history. You will always find me on the side of vermin. I'm sorry.
I was reading a Tumblr post the other day that made me think of you. It was like, Ratatouille is not the name of the rat. Frankenstein is not the name of the monster of our generation.
It is, though. I have a lot of thoughts if you want to go deeper into Frankenstein.
We've already gone
deeper into my brain than we needed to.
If we manage to get this entire podcast up to Halloween, we'll just do an entire break from Wheel of Time and talk about Frankenstein.
Okay.
Which means Sally will talk about Frankenstein while I nod helpfully. The transcripts will be really fun on that one.
The transcripts will be really fun. This is good. We can transition to a nice little housekeeping thing. I've been doing some research on podcast best practice so as to best serve you guys. And something I came across was pointing out to me something I wish I would have realized on my own. But of course, I have able-bodied privilege in this aspect, is that podcasts are inherently kind of an ableist medium because they are entirely audio-based. And so it's a good idea, good practice for a podcast to provide transcripts of its episodes, so for people who have different abilities in regards to hearing, if they want to engage with our medium, we can open the door, but have that available to them. But also, Emily and I tend to talk over each other a lot. If you just want to like ever go back and like check what we said, or if you just want to have it along
it'll
while
probably
you're listening,
be nonsense.
It'll just be there. So whatever you want to use it for, transcripts are coming soon. I've been working on them this week. Hopefully by the time this episode is posted, we'll have episodes 1 through 3, being ambitious, maybe 1 through 4, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll be totally caught up.
Where are those going to be posted? On our website?
Yeah, on our website, thank you.
Okay.
No. Just in the ether, find them, Google them.
No, it's a treasure hunt. Hopefully once we get up, we'll be able to post transcripts and the audio at the same time.
Yeah, once we get all caught up, but it'll, we talk a lot, so transcripts are taking a bit of time.
We talk a lot despite repeated requests to stop talking.
I know, so feel free to delete whatever of that stupid rant.
Anyway, so obviously we didn't get, like, very far synopsis-wise, but we maybe answered some of your questions. Which is a reminder, if you have any questions that you want us to address in the future, or, like, especially in a Q&A episode, we'll probably be doing that at the end of the Eye of the World. You can just send them to our email, everybodyhatesrand@gmail.com. We talked about all our other social media handles earlier, so I'm going to leave that there. Next week, we'll probably continue with Matt and Rand.
Yeah,
up through White Bridge, up until, spoiler, Tom's demise.
Faux death.
His very dramatic not death.
It's a Robert Jordan standard.
Yeah, fake your own death.
Character's not dying.
Moiraine?
Moiraine?
She pulled a fast one on us, I'll admit.
That scene is incredible.
Yeah, we all thought.
Bitch, you thought. You've been the last of me. Surprise, bitch.
She body checked Lanfear into the next dimension, and I was like...
It was honestly like a sexual awakening.
I know.
For a lot of reasons. I was like, this tiny lesbian witch just tackled this embodiment of heterosexuality.
Ugh.
It's incredible. It's so good.
This pair of walking boobs. Like,
okay, but where is the lie? There is none. Lanfear is literally just a pair of walking boobs animated by jealousy.
Yeah.
I hate Lanfear so much. When she died, I was like, fucking finally.
Lanfear is the, like, Venn diagram where envy and lust create.
Overlap. Which, like, brings us back to, are you watching Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood?
I know, Fullmetal Alchemist is the reason I can name all seven deadly sins.
Go.
Okay, capitalism. Hentai. So anyway, watch Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Watch Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood for the seven deadly sins.
I guess we're done.
I
guess we're done. Trailed off in a weird way. This was a weird episode. Sorry.
This was a weird episode, but I feel good about it.
Okay.
I feel great about it.
Good. Sally, sign us off.
Well, this is like a 2 weeks late, but it's officially Pisces season. Oh, so wrap yourself in a good victim complex and have a nice week.